Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoking the reefer.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the Police Academy podcast. I think we've gone the longest now without having an episode. It's been just over 2 weeks. I apologize for that. It's not because I haven't been thinking about the show. I've actually been stewing on something for quite some time now. I just didn't know how I was going to present it or talk about it. But I got an email this morning that has to do with the Philando Castile episode, so I want to answer or address some of those issues in that email. Since that was the last episode, we did kind of tie up some of those loose ends, and then I want to talk about the thing that I've been thinking about lately, which is propaganda. Now, I know that sounds a little out of place on Police Academy, but I assure you, this fits in 100% with what we are about on this show, and I will explain that later. And of course, I should remind you, although I hate doing self-promotion or advertising, but if you want to donate, you can go to the website policeacademypodcast.com. If you have questions, comments, concerns, you can reach out on Twitter, Facebook, or at the email policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And of course, you should check out our sponsor, which is Audible. Much of what I've been involved with intellectually lately has had to do with World War I. I'm not a history buff, but it's intriguing to me, and that's part of where this propaganda discussion is coming from, and it applies magnificently to what we're seeing now today, especially related to police issues. So I have to recommend The Guns of August. It's a huge book, really long audiobook, but if you like history, it is very, very interesting. It's on World War I, how it started, the beginning phases of the war. It's an amazing book. You can find it on Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/Police Academy Podcast. Okay, that's it for the intro. You guys enjoy the show. I'll see you on the flip side. All right, as previously stated, I want to start by addressing some points that were brought up in an email I received this morning, actually, from Steven. I'll just use first name. And, this individual is an intellect. I think that is safe to say. This is someone, like many of you who listen to this show, who is very honestly looking for truly objective truth. The way that, he wrote this email to me is very clear. Listen, I don't understand these issues. I'm looking for understanding here, and this is what I'm confused on, or this is what isn't abundantly clear to me. So, can you clear this up? Again, this is on the Philando Castile shooting. We talked about it last episode. If you haven't listened to that one, then I recommend doing that. I think it was a pretty good episode, especially on a very controversial subject, which shouldn't be controversial. And that gets us to the propaganda issue that we're going to talk about later. But I digress. This Mr. Steven writes this email and he has two main points or questions. Things that I wasn't clear enough during the Philando episode. The first one is he points out that the officer actually reaches inside the car as Philando is reaching for what we're assuming was his wallet. The officer thought he was reaching for a gun, but the officer reaches into the car completely in with his left arm, assumingly to try to control Philando's arm, the threat, his hand that is in his eyes reaching for a gun. He's trying to reach in and stop him from doing that. And that happens right before The officer fully draws. He's kind of slowly drawing his gun out as this interaction goes on, as he says, well, don't reach for it then. Don't pull it out. Each time he says that, he pulls a little bit further, a little bit further, and then he reaches into the car with his left arm, draws his gun, and then he backs off as he begins to fire pretty much at point blank. It's almost point blank range. Now, Stephen pointed this out and, you know, was really hitting on the fact that to him, and I agree, and I think anyone really looking at this objectively would agree that this officer truly did fear for his life. He really did think Philando was pulling out a gun. I don't think that's really a question in this case. And, you know, I don't really talk about that very much because legally, that isn't the question at all. Legally, the question is, you know, if we're trying to understand, you know, was the officer justified in his or her use of deadly force in any, you know, situation we talk about, the legal question is, was it reasonable for that officer to fear for his or her life the moment they used deadly force? So that's why I focus on that, because that's how we figure out if it was justified. But what Stephen's really pointing out is that it was obvious that he truly was fearing for his life. And I agree with that. And I think I missed that arm reach into the car. I should have talked about that. I didn't. So I wanted to bring that up. And he's 100% right. The officer, he's reaching into the car to try to stop this threat. And the one thing that really points out to me is that, okay, his first thing, his first instinct, the thing he did at the very beginning, well, first of all, was a verbal command. Don't reach for it. But as things progressed, he actually physically tried to stop Philando from getting to the weapon that he thought he was reaching for. And then you can see the natural human instinct to pull away from danger as the officer lurches back out of the car and begins to fire. And that kind of gets to the second question that Stephen brings up, and that is, well, what could the officer have done better or different? Was this protocol? Is this how it's supposed to go? Or could things have been done differently? And, you know, I addressed this in the first episode a little bit, but I didn't talk about the officer's side and what can or could have been done in situations like this. And that was kind of on purpose. As you know, if you've listened to the show, I try to focus on the objective facts of a case to really avoid the emotional or and hypothetical even discussions, the what ifs, because honestly, they don't serve much of a purpose other than to confuse people and make people think, well, you know, if the officer could have done this, that, or the other, and those would have been better, then the officer was wrong in doing what he did. And that is incorrect. There certainly are and were, in most of these situations, a better way to have handled them. But in the moment, the officer is trying their best to handle it the best way that they can, given the time constraints and the stress and all that going into it. So I avoided talking about the, well, what could the officer have done differently? You know, I basically said, listen, I don't know if I would have reacted this way, but the way the officer responded in this situation was acceptable. It was within the bounds of his legal authority. It was within the bounds of, quite honestly, moral, in my opinion, moral lines. You know, one of the options, if we're going to talk about what ifs, one of the options the officer has in this situation is to wait longer before using deadly force. That's a moral decision, because to wait longer is basically offering up his own life, hoping that what Philando is actually pulling out is a wallet, not a gun, and, you know, being willing to risk your life to find out. And that's not a legal standard. That's a moral decision. And some officers would have waited. Let's be honest. Some guys would have hesitated longer to pull the trigger in this situation, but that doesn't mean that they're more right than this officer. So, I mean, that one explanation, you can kind of begin to see why I avoided it, because it gets muddy. But I want to answer it anyways, because if you're looking at it purely from an academic perspective and trying to understand, okay, what could have been done? How could this have been done better? Not to say that it wasn't done right, because again, it was completely acceptable what the officer did given the circumstances as we know them today. But what could have been done better, and how could we possibly make it so that officers responded that way in the future? So to answer the first part, what could have been done better? Well, the one thing I just mentioned, the officer could have just waited, but that's not necessarily better. Again, that just comes down to an officer's risk tolerance, basically. How far are you willing to let someone go before you stop that threat that you perceive? But again, that is not really a better tactic. That's just higher risk tolerance. That's willing to go and stick your neck out a little bit further to hopefully avoid having to shoot somebody. Not necessarily a tactical approach. It's just that comes down to individual risk tolerance. There are two things that I think by how this officer responded that could have been done differently and are trainable in a sense and not in another way. The first one is the commands, the verbal commands that he gave were not the best verbal commands. And I talked about this again in the first episode. He tells him, well, don't reach for it. Don't pull it out. He's telling him what not to do, but he's not telling Philando what to do. So those aren't the best commands. When police officers train on the range, at least in my experience, we trained with verbal commands. So you have a draw sequence, and part of that is the verbal command of police, don't move. Now, it's a little weird at first when you do this training because you're yelling at a piece of paper. You're basically playing make-believe, but that's how you ingrain those responses. You have to do it over and over. It has to be muscle memory. So that is one potential quote-unquote fix. Fix is not the right word. One potential way to hopefully avoid this in the future. The caveat there is that this officer could very well have been trained in that same manner and it wouldn't have changed his verbal command here. Because if you look at the video closely, he isn't in his full draw sequence when he's giving the commands, don't reach for it, don't pull it out. That is not a trained command. That is situation specific. The officer is perceiving a particular threat and he's giving a direct command to, you know, toward that threat. Don't reach for that gun, don't pull it out. And as Steven states in this email, as I mentioned in the episode before, if you take the totality of the circumstances, what the officer is telling Philando to do, and then the fact that he reaches into the car to try to stop him from doing what he's doing, it would have been abundantly clear to anyone in Philando's shoes who is thinking clearly and logically that the officer doesn't want you to reach down where you're reaching. You know, I think Philando was confused because he probably was reaching for his wallet, but he failed to perceive, it seems, the fact that the officer wasn't on the same page and he failed to stop in his actions. I'm not putting the blame on Philando, although a lot of the blame falls on him for his own death. But what I'm pointing out here is that the officer actually could have given better commands. He could have just said, don't move. Don't move, period. That's probably the most clear, simplest to understand command that might have prevented the situation. But again, even if that officer trained that into his draw sequence, he wasn't drawing when he was giving he wasn't in his full draw. The gun was still partially in the holster when he was saying, don't reach for it. His hand's on the gun. The officer's hand is on his own gun, gripping it. And beginning to kind of slide it out of the holster, but he's saying, don't reach for it, don't move, don't reach for it, don't pull it out. And then he draws, which is the point at which you would typically say, police don't move. It's as you draw your gun out, right? By that point in this situation, it's too late. The officer is drawing and firing immediately as he's reaching back out of the car and backing up, okay? So again, I can't call it a fix because many officers train this, but it doesn't help when you have a situation like this where the verbal commands preceded the actual draw, because the officer probably thought he was giving better verbal commands than that. They're specific to the situation, but in hindsight, they weren't as clear as they could have been because they didn't tell Flando what to do. They just said what not to do, and he, in his eyes, wasn't doing that. He was reaching for his wallet. So don't move could have been, I think would have been a better command. But again, even with the proper training, that might not have been the response. And I mean, here's the thing. There is no protocol for the nuance that this life and that human beings and the interaction between human beings brings to it. You can't train every single situation. Each encounter is unique. You can train to the best of your ability to kind of address the big things and hope that that training comes out when it needs to. But in the end, even the best training in the world can't prevent some of these things from happening. This was a mistake of fact shooting, we believe. Now, if Flando was reaching for a gun, then it wasn't. It was, there was no mistake at all. But if what we believe is true, and that is that he was probably reaching for his wallet, this is a mistake of fact shooting. But even the best training in the world isn't necessarily going to prevent these things from happening. And I'll try to remember to bring that back up as we talk about propaganda, because it's an important point. Now, the other thing that the officer, in my opinion, again, this is armchair quarterbacking for the officers listening out there. Don't get mad at me. I'm trying to answer Steven's question, which is very honest. He's trying to understand, is there a better way? Not to say that this officer was wrong, but is there a better way, and can we train that? The other option here, given the circumstances, as this officer did reach into the car to try to get physical control of Philando's arm or hand, I think the best option there is to maintain that contact. Now, the officer almost does exactly what I'm suggesting here, and that is he has his left arm in the vehicle as he begins to do his full draw with his right arm. Now, I think personally, in my experience and my understanding, I'm not a use of force expert, but in my opinion, it would have been better for the officer if he had any sort of contact with Philando's right arm to maintain that contact as he does a full draw, brings the weapon inside the car or near that, you know, to where if a gun does present, you know, Philando does pull a gun out, one shot is going to end the encounter. An instant, lower brainstem, or at least headshot at point blank range is going to stop the encounter. If there's a better way to have handled it, I think that's it. You maintain contact with your left arm, you draw to that point blank and wait until you can either control it and de-escalate, or you see that a gun is coming out and you pull the trigger. Again, even at point-blank range, your reaction time is slow enough that by the time you recognize a gun and it you pull the trigger, Philando would have been able to get off at least one or two rounds. And that's a scientific fact, okay? But at least in that situation, you know when you react, the encounter's over because it's going to kill him instantly. Now, the problem with expecting an officer to respond in this way is that it goes against every fiber in a human being. I mean, we naturally recoil and pull back from a threat, especially one that is bound to kill you if it gets you, right? That poisonous snake. You jump back. You don't reach for it. It's not natural for a human being to see a rattlesnake a foot away from them and reach down and grab it. You jump and run away and scream like a girl. At least that's what I do. So the natural human response is to get away from the danger. So I think maintaining contact there would have been better, but that kind of ignores our human nature. And you know, some people would have been able to stay in that car, even thinking that Philando was drawing a gun, overriding that natural response. But I'd say a large majority of the general population and even the police community population is not going to be able in the moment to override that response. And they are going to break contact with that left arm in the suspect's right arm and address it the way that this officer did, unless they choose, again, to wait. But either way, I think most people would back off as this officer did. So there's my somewhat long-winded roundabout way of answering these really good questions. You know, I did talk about some of this in the first episode. There are reasons why I avoided this armchair quarterbacking because, number one, well, I guess I don't really care about the hate mail. But no matter how many times I say, listen, I'm not criticizing the officer, officers get pissed at me for doing these hypotheticals. But number two, and this is unfair for me to assume, but oftentimes people take these hypotheticals and again, they use them as, well, the officer should have done this, therefore he was wrong. They don't understand the difference between having other options and being justified. Because every time in any given situation, there are always other options. And some of them are likely better. Rarely do human beings respond to these types of situations with the best possible outcome. We are not supercomputers. We can't analyze things that quickly and respond in kind. And people fail oftentimes to separate those two things, justification and the fact that, hey, things could have been done differently. So that's why I avoid these things. The reason I say it's unfair is because this audience is much more keen to those things, I think. I think you guys get that. So maybe I should have gone there in the first episode on Philando, but here we are now, and I hope after, you know, more discussion on this situation that, you know, things are pretty clear to at least this audience. And that brings me to this issue of propaganda, because this has been kind of a revelation for me. You know, I started Police Academy so that people would have a place to come to find truly objective, you know, as well as any human being can be objective. I try to be 100% objective, truth on police issues. And, you know, I knew it. I had this feeling of, you know, why aren't sources like this more readily available? You know, and I chalked it up to, well, you know, the media is going to fan the flames one way or the other. You know, we have this division in our country, and I think much of that is driven by the media because they make more money when they say things dramatically to the left or to the right or anti-police or pro-police, whatever it is, right? And I chalked it up to that. But there's something, I think, now a little bit deeper that is more of the root of why things are the way they are in this country. If we're talking about the media, if we're talking about specifically the discussion about the police, not only in America, but across the globe, okay? And that is propaganda. I'm going to read some quotes, and I will tell you who they are from after we finish reading them, and then I have to explain why I am reading this text. But here are a couple of quotes explaining what propaganda is. Quote, "The art of propaganda consists in putting a matter so clearly and forcibly before the minds of the people as to create a general conviction regarding the reality of a certain fact, the necessity of certain things, and the just character of something that is essential. But as this art is not an end in itself, and because its purpose must be exactly that of the advertisement poster, to attract the attention of the masses and not by any means to dispense individual instructions to those who already have an educated opinion on things or who wish to form such an opinion on grounds of objective study, because that is not the purpose of propaganda, it must appeal to the feelings of the public rather than to their reasoning powers. So what this author is saying is propaganda, the purpose of it is not the end. It's a means to the end, and therefore it's just an advertisement poster. It's not appealing to reason thought. It's appealing to feelings. Now, as I read these quotes, you're probably going to get an idea of what, or I guess I should say who in our modern context is using this, especially in the realm of police issues. Continuing, quote, all propaganda must be presented in a popular form and must fix its intellectual level so as not to be above the heads of the least intellectual of those to whom it is directed. End quote. So here he's saying it can't be at a high intellectual level. It has to be simple enough that the masses, the broad masses, will understand it immediately. It has to be simple. Okay. Continuing, quote, the art of propaganda consists precisely in being able to awaken the imagination of the public through an appeal to their feelings in finding the appropriate psychological form that will arrest the attention and appeal to the hearts of the national masses. Again, can you see how this relates to our present day? How this is presenting itself? Continuing, quote, all effective propaganda must be confined to a few bare essentials, and those must be expressed as far as possible in stereotyped formulas. These slogans should be persistently repeated until the very last individual has come to grasp the idea that has been put forward. Note there, we're talking about that these have to be presented in stereotyped formulas. These are slogans persistently repeated until the public has grasped the idea that has been put forward. It is not truth. The intention is to get a particular idea to take hold in the mind of the public. Continuing, quote, the very first condition which has to be fulfilled in every kind of propaganda, namely a systematically one-sided attitude toward every problem that has to be dealt with. Huh, that sounds a whole lot like the current conversation in the media today about police issues, doesn't it? A wholehearted, one-sided discussion about anything related to the topic. It sounds like it to me, at least. Continuing, quote, propaganda must not investigate the truth. Again, must not investigate the truth objectively, which is what we do here. And insofar as it is favorable to the other side, present it according to the theoretical rules of justice. Yet it must present only that aspect of the truth which is favorable to its own side. So he's saying we shouldn't be objectively looking at the facts of the situation. And we should ignore anything that supports the other side's argument. I've got two more here, and we will talk about this. Quote, propaganda must be limited to a few simple themes, and these must be represented again and again. Perseverance is the first and most important condition of success. And further down it says, the leading slogan must, of course, be illustrated in many ways from several angles. But in the end, one must always return to the assertion of the same formula. End quote. Can anyone guess who those quotes are from? I'm sure with the size of the audience as it sits today, many of you know who this is. Now, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I've been kind of in World War I mode lately, listening to the Guns of August. I re-listened to, gosh, there's 6 episodes, 3 to 4 hours a piece. So up to 24 hours of hardcore history on World War One. I mean, I've been in the zone of World War One, and in these quotes, there was mention of means to an end. Who wrote the quote? It was Adolf Hitler. Now, this is where I have to defend myself. Why am I reading Mein Kampf? Which, by the way, if you're not familiar, Mein Kampf means my struggle. It was written by Hitler while he was in prison between World War One and World War II. It basically explains what he believes to be the right path for his country, you know, who he believes the problem to be, i.e. the Jews, and what basically should be done about it. I'm not done reading it, but why am I reading it? Well, as I am not a history buff and not a political expert, I'm trying to understand, and this is actually initially was part of my research on Black Lives Matter, because I'm continually hearing that Black Lives Matter has a very strongly Marxist ideology. And I was under the incorrect perception that Hitler was a Marxist. Now, if you're shaking your head, if you understand this, and I do now, but I didn't when I picked this up. I was trying to understand what Marxism really is. And, you know, I begin reading this book and find out that Hitler hates Marxists, and that's not at all what he, you know, what his political ideology was really about. He's a nationalist. But even before I figured that out, forgive me if you have a problem with this, but I can't help but be intrigued by being able to get inside the head of one of history's most notorious characters to try to understand. You know, I'm not reading this for inspiration, okay? Please don't come up and punch me in the face and call me a Nazi, because Hitler was a messed up dude, and he was very wrong, obviously, in a lot of his beliefs. I'm not reading it for inspiration. I'm reading it to understand how something like the Holocaust can happen. And I mean, this guy lays it all out. So that's why I'm reading it. It was part of my Black Lives Matter research initially, but it turned out, you know, if you've listened to these quotes, to really, gosh, I mean, for me, this was a revelation. When I read those quotes, you know, I read this at night before I go to bed. And I sat up in bed, I asked my wife, do you have a pen or a highlighter or something? She hands me it, and I'm like, highlighting like crazy. First time I've made any marks in this book, because maybe it's just me. I hope you guys, after reading those quotes, you see the correlation here. Those quotes, to me, sound exactly, and okay, I'm going to say it, and then I'll backpedal and try to make sure everybody doesn't start throwing stones, but it sounds exactly like what Black Lives Matter does. They are masters of propaganda. My backtrack is, they're not the only ones. I mean, I think politically, both sides are masters of propaganda. But when we're talking specifically about the police discussion, Black Lives Matter, these guys have Hitler's form of propaganda nailed down. They are executing on every piece of what he, you know, believes is necessary to carry out an effective propaganda campaign. Now, like I said, Hitler was very wrong and a messed up dude in many ways, but he was really right. This was, if you read his book, you can tell he's very intelligent. And he was right about a lot of things too. One was that Germany, in many ways, they may not have won World War One anyways, but they lost the propaganda war big time in World War One, and it drove Hitler crazy. So he studied this, and he understood that propaganda, especially when it comes to war and international public opinion was extremely important. And Hitler used propaganda pretty successfully, I think, and pretty tragically, to affect the masses, the public within his own country. The Holocaust wouldn't have happened if it weren't for Hitler's effective use of propaganda. So he's probably right. That's what I'm getting at. Hitler's probably right when he's talking about propaganda. It seems he knows what he's talking about because he was really, really good at it. And I'm not comparing Black Lives Matter to Hitler. Okay? But the accusation of you're a Nazi is a popular one to make today. And gosh, this is Hitler explaining how to affect the masses, to put an idea in the heads of the public. And if, when we're talking about the police, policing issues and the discussion in the public today, Black Lives Matter is the expert in propaganda. Now, again, I started this show because of a discussion on some show about a police issue that was way off topic. And it wasn't from an anti-police organization. It was from, I can't remember who it was from, but they were just way off target. And I finally decided I'm going to do a show and we're going to get on target. We're going to talk about these issues. We're going to break them down. We're going to look at the facts, the truth, be objective, and appeal to reason. What I didn't understand at that time, I guess the way I do now, is that the broad masses of the public, okay, I'm not talking about the people listening to this show, because I think just the very fact that you follow a show like Police Academy means that you are looking for the intellectual argument. You are looking to find true reason in your opinion, something to actually back up what you believe. You're looking for truth. If you weren't, I don't think you'd still be here. So understand, don't take this to be offensive, but I think a majority of people don't go about finding their understanding of truth in that way. I think most people, even the most objective of us, I tend to be strongly logic-based, which helps me to remain pretty objective. But man, I'd be a liar if I said that emotion never impacted my reaction to events or my perception of them or the opinion I have about a certain issue, a person, a topic, whatever. I'd be a liar if I said emotion didn't affect me in that way. Well, I try to recognize that emotion and try to, you know, remove it from the equation as best as I can. But it affects us all. And if I'm on the very logical, objective, reasoned end of things, which I believe that I am, there are people that are better at it than me, but I'm on that end of the spectrum. I am, and I think many of you, most of you, are the exception to the norm. Most of society, as Hitler would say, the masses, if you want to get them to understand something, you have to, number one, communicate at a very low level intellectually. You have to repeat those slogans over and over and over. Hands up, don't shoot. And if it's propaganda, it doesn't matter if it's true. Hands up, don't shoot is a lie. But how many people think that is true, that Michael Brown was shot with his hands up in the back at Point Blank Range by a murderous cop? How does a large section. I won't say a majority. I don't think it's a majority, but a lot of people believe that to be the reality of Michael Brown's death and believe that this hands up, don't shoot is a common theme in deadly force situations. How does that come to be? Because statistically, even anecdotally, it's really hard to find anything that backs that up. And if you understand the Michael Brown case, nothing in that particular case backs that up. It's a complete lie. But Black Lives Matter has repeated these slogans over and over and over and over again from many different angles, and they're simple, and they appeal to emotion. And that is why these ideas have taken hold, and they're so hard to deal with, because most people don't form their opinions with logic and reason. They feel. They have an emotional response to something, and man, they've got a strong opinion with a whole lot of nothing to back it up. I'm trying to think of some other examples. I mean, you look at the Philando Castile case. The narrative put forth the thing, the seed that they sowed in this, what I'll call a campaign of propaganda, because I don't think you can really, what else is it? And this is where the revelation for me is, because it's been so hard for me to understand, okay, does Black Lives Matter believe what they're saying, or do they know it's a lie and they're just saying it because it's going to get them what they want? You know, after understanding this about propaganda and seeing this correlation, to me, my assumption is that they know better. I mean, there are plenty of really smart people that are a part of Black Lives Matter, and they know, I think, that a lot of this stuff is complete garbage, but they're willing to use it. They're willing to take an event and take the most emotionally charged parts of it, the things that will just cut you to your core, and use them to create a public opinion about the police that suits their ends, that will get them to where they want to be, regardless of whether it's true. Philando Castile, the narrative out there, the way that the media and Black Lives Matter would talk about that incident is, you know, I played clips in the last episode. Philando did everything right, and he still got shot because he was black. Right. Okay. So they're taking some truths there. He is black. He got shot, and he did some things right. The one thing he did right was telling the officer he had a gun, but everything else was completely wrong. But if you want your propaganda to be effective, you have to ignore the things that don't support your argument. So Philando Castile, a black man that did everything right, still got shot by the police. Charles Kinsey, this was a black gentleman in Florida trying to get a mentally deranged individual back to this facility. And he had his hands in the air, and he was shot by accident by one of the officers. He was actually trying to protect Mr. Kinsey, right? But again, it doesn't matter what the true facts of the situation are. That has been used as an example of hands up, don't shoot. But again, it's a complete lie. Yes, Charles Kinsey's hands were up. Yes, he got shot. But he was actually the victim in this case, and the police knew it, and they were trying to protect him. So the fact that he was caught in the crossfire, quote unquote, doesn't support the hands up, don't shoot narrative at all. But those facts don't matter. It's propaganda. Another example that I can think of right now, again, I've been stewing on this topic and how to present it for a while. I really wanted to do it well, because I think it was a revelation for me, and maybe it will be for many of you. So I wanted to do it well, But as I sat down to do a show today to respond to some of these questions, I felt like I needed to get it out here. And if you guys, again, as always, I want you to respond. And if you want to talk about this stuff, shoot me something on Twitter, on Facebook, email me, whatever, and we'll have another episode on it and go further and deeper. I am running into a time limit right now, so I've got to get off the mic. But the one last example I can give is the discussion about statistics and the rate at which unarmed black men are shot by the or are killed by the police in this country. Another, you know, in both sides can use statistics. Statistics can always be used to try to support an argument if you you know, twist them a certain way, one way or the other. But that argument is completely unfounded statistically. It is, again, a partial truth. Yes, black men are shot by the police, especially unarmed black men, at higher rates than their portion of the population would suggest they should be. But actually, the truth of the situation is that they're shot at lower rates than their participation in especially violent crime would suggest they would be. So if you ignore the fact that they're committing a disproportionate amount of violent crime, then it looks terrible for the police. But if you recognize that fact, well, it actually seems to suggest that the police are shooting black men, unarmed black men, even at lower rates than the statistics would suggest. Now, we don't know exactly how violent crime statistics should affect those shooting rates, but you can't ignore them. And that's exactly what groups like Black Lives Matter do. They point at the one statistic that looks bad for the police and completely deny and ignore the other. That's not intellectually honest. That's not objective, but it doesn't matter if it's propaganda. Because if you repeat it enough, six shots, you know, you go to the Black Lives Matter protest, you're going to see signs of that people are holding up that say someone's name and how many times they were shot. Again, they're repeating something that is factually true. How many times an individual was shot. But what they're trying to communicate is that this is completely out of control, excessive, that it's murder. And they're ignoring the fact that the number of shots in a deadly force situation in and of itself really has nothing to do with the justification of the use of deadly force. Every shot has to be justified, but 6 shots, 10 shots, 50 shots, 100 shots can all be justified. 1 shot could be unjustified. The number by itself is irrelevant. But again, it's propaganda. And they repeat it over and over and over and over again until people accept it as truth. Because if they're hearing it that much and it causes such a powerful emotional reaction in those individuals, then it must be true. Unless, of course, it's propaganda. Quote, "The art of propaganda consists precisely in being able to awaken the imagination of the public through an appeal to their feelings, in finding the appropriate psychological form that will arrest the attention and appeal to the hearts of the national masses." End quote. Courtesy, Adolf Hitler. All right, ladies and gents, that is a wrap on such a controversial episode. I thought the last one was, and now I'm talking about Adolf Hitler and the fact that I'm reading his book. Well, you know, I said that I don't want to get punched in the face and called a Nazi, but honestly, you can call me Nazi if you want to. I don't think many listening to this episode, at least my regular audience, would. You guys get it. But if you want to jump on the, hey, you're a Nazi, I'm going to punch you in the face bandwagon, feel free. You can call me a Nazi. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend punching me in the face. probably won't end well. But again, if, man, I really, really, I know this is a weird direction for the show to go, but this was, again, a huge revelation for me to understand our current situation through the lens and understanding of what propaganda really is. That changed the game for me. And I wanted to share that with you guys, even if it means I get called a Nazi and even if it means I get punched in the face, because you guys are worth it and the truth is worth it. I'm not going to read a review today. There are a few new ones up there, but I got to be honest, I don't know which one I left off on. So, and I don't have time to go back and find out today. So I'm going to end without a review. I will get to you guys in future episodes, but thank you for writing one. If you haven't done so, please do so. I'd appreciate it. Even if you don't give me a 5-star, I see another 4-star up there. I'm okay with that. The truth is all that matters, even if it's that you hate me. I'll see you guys next time. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing.